Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is it! The time has come!
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
The right hand, push him down!
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that!
On TalkSport.
You're listening to the Fight Night podcast with me, Gareth A. Davies. Joining me this week in the studio, Spencer Oliver. Well, let's get into it. First of all, I caught up with Eddie Hearn, all the news, Conor Benn, Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia. But first, Hearn versus Warren, Queensbury versus Matchroom. Here's what's going down at the moment with Eddie, plus all his views on the heavyweight division at the moment and Tyson Fury.
He chooses two weight classes, Frank chooses two weight classes, and His Excellency chooses the final weight class. That will be decided in the next couple of weeks. And then from there, we'll announce officially the actual fighters at the Joshua Ngannou Fight Week press conference. So then you go away once you know the weight classes and you pick your number one seed, effectively. And it's gonna be a fascinating format, desperate to win. And looking forward to duking off with Mr. Warren in Saudi Arabia on a massive night, of course, with Bivol Beterbiev, which, you know, arguably the best fight that can be made in the sport right now.
Would it be, we've got him on the show tonight, what would it be like if, say, you've chosen a heavyweight, Johnny Fisher, and he's chosen Moses Itauma? Is that the kind of thing that's going to happen?
Yeah, I think you're going to pick your best fighter from the weight class. So, you know, those guys particularly are obviously two fighters that are starting their journey in their professional career. I think, you know, inevitably they're the kind of fighters that are on a collision course to face each other because they're two very good young heavyweights. So I think the aim is, you know, the higher profile fights right now for those cards. So, you know, as many world championship fights as we can put together as well. But our real elite guys from the stable in terms of the guys who are in the primes of their career is the idea.
Do you think we're going to just instinctively now, and I'll move on. Do you think we're going to get Anthony Yard against Callum Smith?
I mean, that is definitely, you know, if the light heavyweight division gets selected, obviously our top two picks from there, from the UK, are Callum Smith and Craig Richards. Craig actually fights tonight after being out of the ring for 16 months. So, you know, pending if Callum was ready, you know, pending if he wanted to be in that kind of fight, I know Craig would. So, but again, you know, Yard's got to want to be in there. He also fights tonight, actually, interestingly. Yeah. I actually love the Anthony Yard Craig Richards fight as well. It might not have the same profile yet as Yard against Callum Smith, but it's a great fight. And you know, as I said, if the light heavyweight division is selected, you know, Frank's best light heavyweight, of course, is Anthony Yard. And you know, we've got Callum Smith, Craig Richards, Khalil Coe from the US. We've also got Dmitry Bivol, but he's busy that night. So, yeah, there's definite potential for that fight.
It's not often I ask you to comment on Tyson Fury, but I haven't caught up with you since the gash to his eye 8 days ago now, and obviously it was dealt with very, very quickly. In terms of 24 hours later, we had a new date, May the 18th, for Fury versus Usyk for the undisputed title. I mean, what did you make of the ridiculous nature of all the conspiracy theories flying around for 24 hours?
Yeah, I think that Fury's always been controversial with some of the things that he said that haven't materialized. And, you know, he's a showman as well. So I think not everyone believes every word he says, but in this instance, you have to, of course. I mean, you know, to suggest that he's going to cut his eye open to avoid a, you know, 10x million pound payday to fight for the undisputed champion when he's already done 7 or 8 weeks in camp is quite ridiculous. And, you know, it's for sure a genuine cut. It's a shame for everybody. You know, I did say to His Excellency the other day, funnily enough, these things happen. It's actually made the fight bigger.
Yeah.
You know, those February fights come around very quickly. And, you know, before we knew it, there was like 3 weeks to go, 2 weeks to go, and probably hadn't had the build up that it deserved because, you know, you're coming off the back of Christmas and you're coming off the back of Day of Reckoning. And now, you know, they can really get their teeth into the promotion. It's got a little bit spiteful as well between the two camps. So all in all, you know, very depressing at the time, but I think it'll work for the best and it's going to be a huge fight May the 18th.
Tell me about Anthony Joshua. That's just a month away now against Francis Ngannou. Jeopardy there for Anthony Joshua. Lots of debate. Massive opportunity for him to set a yardstick there against the Cameroonian who looked amazing against Tyson Fury back in October. Have you spoken to Anthony? Has he gone out yet? Is he going to do a long period in Saudi Arabia? Can you update us on Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, he's feeling tremendous, really. He's coming off the back of a fantastic performance against Otto Wallin. You know, it's quite funny, the shift in perception or, you know, opinion of where he's at. I was over watching my daughter play football and I must have had four people come up to me going, he's looking unbelievable now, Joshua. He'll beat everyone. You know, and a couple of fights ago, it was, oh, he's just not the same fighter anymore. So he's still got, I guess, you know, something to prove to people, not that he needs to, but I think after the Wilding performance, anyone that knows boxing knows that he's in the groove, you know, knows that his confidence is back, knows that he's punching harder than ever. And you hope now he brings that momentum back to camp with Ben and back into this fight. This fight is very different. Like you said, I think his best word is jeopardy. You know, Francis Ngannou is a mountain of a man. He's incredibly strong. He hits very hard, but I still stand by he shouldn't be able to live with the elite professional boxers. But, you know, maybe he can prove us wrong again. It's a fight that carries little reward for AJ until we were told of His Excellency's plans to put the winner in with the winner of Fury Usyk. So for us, we felt that this win not only made a statement, but it also gave us a clearer path to undisputed. You know, whether that's fighting Hrgović after that now because of the delay or whether, you know, His Excellency wants to just make the biggest fight in the history of the sport and the biggest fight that can be made in boxing. And you know him, I believe he'll want to do that. So I think a solid win against Ngannou would put AJ in a fantastic position.
Eddie, there was also a suggestion, and I don't know if the timings work out. Let's say Anthony makes easy work of Francis Ngannou. Say there's an injury. He seemed to suggest that if there is an injury with this forfeiture of £8 million, $10 million to either Tyson Fury or Alexander Usyk, that he seemed to be suggesting last week on the Ariel Helwani show when all four of them got together in that dual cast that Anthony Joshua may be bumped up to fight in May as well. Am I thinking right there?
Well, we'll be ready. I mean, you know, if the amazing thing with Anthony, Gareth, is that he is will be boxing four times in 11 months, which he's been brilliant for him. And it's so refreshing for his career after so many periods of inactivity through COVID and just through big stadium fights and mandatory obligations and people messing around. So, you know, if he comes through, he will need a rest at some point, but if he comes through Ngannou well, and that opportunity presented itself, I would think he'd be ready, you know, to fight Tyson Fury or Usyk.
Now, brevity's our friend here, Spencer Oliver. We've got 2 minutes before we go to break, and then we've got Johnny Fisher and his father, John Fisher, in with us. Eddie Hearn on Anthony Joshua there. Predict Joshua's year then.
Yeah, listen, I think that, you know, Joshua is going from strength to strength, isn't he? He's had a very constructive year last year. I think he's building on that. He's coming through that year with a lot of confidence off that Valin win. And like I say, I think he goes into with Ngannou. I think that now he knows what he's going in against with Ngannou. He knows what he's up against with Ngannou. The fear factor is there, where Fury never had that. I think he puts in a great performance. I think he does a much better job on Ngannou than Fury does. And that will then, he'll build on that. And he's going to go, and like I said to you, Gareth, and I stand by what I say here, I think we get Fury Usyk, and I think Joshua goes in with the winner of that, and I predict that he's obviously going to be Tyson Fury. That's where I see it.
Well, Eddie Hearn spoke to me about Johnny Fisher, the big man, fresh off his victory over Dimitri Bezos in Las Vegas on his Vegas debut, joined us in the studio for two sections. In the second section, big John Fisher, looking lighter, leaner and meaner, and very, very generous, of course, with all his time, joined his son to discuss the familial relationships. Here we go. Johnny Fisher, then Big John.
How I wish that there were more.
This is a big attack from Fisher. It's accurate and it's powerful, and the referee steps in with just a few seconds to go in the opening round.
The winner by TKO, he's still undefeated, the Romford Bull, Johnny Fisher.
Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas with your neon flashing and your one-armed bandits crashing. All those hopes down the drain.
Well, viva Las Vegas, indeed. The Boschmeister himself, Johnny Romford Bull Fisher. Johnny, welcome to the studio with myself and Spencer.
Brilliant to be in here again, Gareth. Spence, thanks for having me back.
How are you, my man?
Good, mate. Good. Little bit jet lagged. Been eating a bit too much rubbish food. Been a heavy day today, but it's been good.
If you drank, I thought you'd have been on the beer today, but you're not. You're just tired. You've been to Twickenham as well with Big John,
yes,
who's going to join us in about 10 or 15 minutes for a segment in the studio. Talk to us about the Vegas experience, first of all. How it felt. Name up in lights. Plaza Hotel, the old town. Talk us through 5 weeks that you had there.
It was an amazing 5 weeks. A hard 5 weeks. Grueling 5 weeks. Not pleasure. All business. I know it's in Vegas, but it doesn't matter where you are when you're training in training camp. You've got to be focused. And the Plaza Hotel looked after me fantastically. But my lord, it's nice to be home. Back with my home comforts in England.
We're going to talk to you about you in a minute, but I caught up with matching promoter Eddie Hearn earlier today, and he had this to say about you, Johnny.
Johnny has established himself now. I said in the interview after the fight, we all know how popular he is. We all know how many tickets he sells, but I think he's actually really establishing himself as like I said, an international heavyweight prospect. You know, he's a very, very good fighter. He's improving a lot. He's very intelligent. He's fit, he's strong, you know, he can take a shot, he punches hard.
And extremely hands. Marketable and extremely
yes, and very
marketable.
Exciting, very yeah, exciting.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that I want to, you know, move to with Johnny is activity, because sometimes he's had a few hand injuries and I want him to just learn a little bit, because it's not going to be long before he's in the deep end. And, you know, hopefully we can get him out in April and then see him headline in the summer. And, you know, like a British title eliminator, I think that's coming. And you know when Johnny Fisher's in a British title eliminator or a British heavyweight title, he's selling out the Copper Box, he's selling out Wembley, maybe even the O2. And, you know, those fights with a David Adelaide and stuff like that, they're not too far away and they're really intriguing domestic heavyweight fights. And, you know, I back Johnny Fisher in those fights. I think he's getting better and better. And I think he's going to be a real threat, certainly domestically, And hopefully even beyond that.
Just a reminder that we're live on the TalkSport YouTube channel. You can watch this, of course, Johnny Fisher in the studio with us. Your response to Eddie's comments there, and you mentioned the Albert Hall to me, so where's he going with all that?
Well, I just think he's right. What I'm reading to that is, yeah, I'm getting to that level. I'm coming there, but there's still
400 fans to Vegas. Brilliant.
It's great, it's brilliant, but there's still learning to be done, but that doesn't mean we're going in the right direction. Everything's moving and everything's coming to a to a head, and it's exciting.
Yeah, do you know what, Johnny? You're in control, really, of your destiny as well, aren't you? Because, like, you're a realist, and that is the most important thing, because it's easy for fighters to run away with themselves and want to go into these big fights, and, you know, there's always egos involved in boxing. It's like, yeah, I'm ready for him. Give me David Adelaide. Give me these other young prospects, you know, and some are coming through. Give me those guys. But you go, no, hold a minute. Let me get them when I'm ready, on my terms. Let me develop. And you go there, you've got that international experience now. Going to Vegas, doesn't matter what the magnitude of the show was, what size of the show it was. No. It's about the experience.
The experience of being in Vegas.
And that's where you're learning.
Training out there for 5-6 weeks. It's about experience in general. And as you said, Eddie said, experience is going to be key for me. Someone who didn't have a long, long amateur career. That's what it's about. And your good mate, Jess Harding, always says to me, Johnny, you won't get good till you've had 15, 20 fights. And I can feel that. I can feel the difference between 0 to 5 fights and 5 to 10 fights. So what am I going to be like when I'm in 15 and 20 fights?
Ricky Hatton, one of the greatest fighters this country's produced, right? Didn't box for a British title until his 25th fight.
Yeah. Exactly.
Why did they do that? Because they took their time for him. They recognised the talent and they just let him learn. And he was a good amateur pedigree, Ricky, as well.
Yeah.
But they let him develop, and then he got that fight against John Faxton where he picked up that bad cut and his career just moved on from there, and he went on.
There was a thing called the WBU world title at time. That he had 18 defences of it or something.
Yeah, 18 defences,
But that doesn't exist anymore. It was like a Norfolk title, basically, wasn't it?
I think in general, in the way the modern world's gone, not just in boxing but in sport and entertainment in general, everyone wants everything instantly. And I don't think, as a professional boxer, a professional heavyweight boxer, you can get everything instantly. Things have to be learned on the job, and you have to learn, have to come through things. And Harry Armstrong fight, that was a brilliant fight for me. This one was good for me because I went to Vegas and experienced. You pick up incremental little things every step of the way, and when I'm ready, it will be apparent and it'll be time to go.
First round knockout, of course, of Dimitri Bezos, who'd been stopped by David Adelaide in 2 rounds, I think, 9-11 months earlier. You are going to have some issues because you're going to have to choose soon. You might be drawn to Saudi Arabia to fight on that card. You may not be, but you may be wanting to headline Royal Albert Hall. That's something that you've mentioned to me. That's an ambition. This man, I've got to say this because I've loved him for a very long time.
Yes.
30 years almost I've known this guy now. The Albert Hall is the last place he fought.
Yes.
Do you know that?
We spoke about it before that, but we just literally had a conversation.
We were talking about Spence fought there in 1998. I think Julius Francis and Danny Williams, I covered that fight in 99.
Yeah.
I think we had to wait years. Lyndon Arthur fought there in 2021.
Mark Tibbs fought there. Jess Harding fought there.
I know you've forgotten some of that night because of what terrible things happened to you, but what a venue that
is
to fight
honestly,
in.
Honestly, for me, it was the dream. Like that was always a dream for me, to top the bill at the Royal Albert Hall. You know you made it. Do you know what my dream was? To be on the front page of the Boxing News and to top the bill at the Royal Albert Hall.
It's amazing.
And I achieved both of those on that night. And the only sad thing about it is, I remember travelling to the Royal Albert Hall, waking up two weeks later in a hospital bed, thinking, what's going on here? Albert Hall as well, John. After I had this accident and this injury, and I sort of made that recovery, and it took me, you know, the best part of a year to recover properly. After 3 months, part of the rehabilitation
with Jess was to go back
to the Royal Albert Hall to re-kick the memory, see if I could resurface.
Wait for this, though.
This is great.
Go on.
So I go back, go up on, you know, I'm up on the balcony, I'm looking down where they have the ring in the centre there. I'm looking down, I'm going, nothing, Jess. Nothing. I can't get anything. He's like, Spence, let's get to the dressing room. Let's go in the dressing room. Where he was warming up. Let's have a little look in there. Go in the dressing room. Look, like you couldn't swing a cat in this dressing room. I'm looking around. I'm going, nothing, Jess. Nothing's coming.
Yeah, nothing's hitting me.
I open the locker. My suit's still in there for three months. Donna Karen. I bought it in New York when me and Jess went out to New York.
Remember the jacket?
Why'd you leave that in there? Obviously.
I was meant to be putting it on after the fight.
That's why. The most amazing thing is no one went in that dressing room for 3 months.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I didn't leave there.
I didn't leave there too well, mate.
You can
tell I'm jet lagged, can't I?
And in May, on May the 2nd, I think it is, May the 2nd, this year, 26 years later, we celebrate this man's life. Let's not forget how inherently dangerous this sport is. And you are a survivor and a beautiful human being, my friend.
And
it's the truth. Where are you going next? What do you do? Do you have a rest now? Actually, you told me you're heading off to Portugal, I think.
I'm going to Portugal tomorrow, to Lisbon, with my brothers coming with me. A couple of my mates are coming for a few days. But listen,
Bosch Army, any of the Bosch Army
guys? Few of the Bosch Army, more of the social media side of the Bosch Army, the guys behind the scenes sort of thing.
Any good Chinese's over there?
I hope so. I have to do some exploring.
Do you know what I like about you? You cannot not have your feet on the ground because you've got the big man who anchors you. Big John Fisher,
physically and
mentally, psychologically, emotionally. We're going to get him in. We're going to get him in a minute because I want both of you in here for a long section, section, whatever it is.
Whatever.
When you said just now that your feet are on the ground, that man, and I know him pretty well now, is one of the reasons why you'll never get beyond who you are and where you are.
And why would I want to do that? Everything in my life, everyone around my life. We were talking about this today, actually, when we was at the going on the way to the match from Fight Day 5K. The people that you are around are so influential and so important. And the way I've been brought up, and not only that, my family and friends, everyone's from a hard-working background. We're not poor, we're not rich, but we're just normal people.
Calm down. Calm down.
You're listening to Fight Night on TalkSport. You cannot calm down, Spencer Oliver, when there is a tune like this on. Welcome to the studio for Fight Night on TalkSport. We are in the studio with Spencer the Omen Oliver, my colleague tonight, but also Johnny Fisher, the Romford Bull, the young British heavyweight. He's just had his 10th victory, I believe, in Las Vegas. 11th. Thank you, Johnny. And Big John Fisher, the big John. The John Fisher joins us as well now. Johnny's been telling us about Vegas. Big John, and you are Big John. Congratulations on losing 5.5 stone. You look magnificent, as always. How important is it that you and 400 of your Bosch Army were in Vegas with John for the journey?
Well, first of all, Gareth, Spencer, thanks for having me on. I didn't realise I was going to come on, so much obliged. It was great over in Las Vegas. Very humbled by the support that Johnny received all the way across the world. But also at home, people that supported at home. We know there was a lot of people having parties and watching on DAZN, and it's just great. It's truly, as a parent, it's truly humbling.
You can anchor him. He's worked for you in the past, delivering meats, delivering the cheeses. We've both been to your house for the Chinese, of course, Spencer and I. We know what you are intrinsically. You anchor him in many ways, don't you? If that's the right word.
Myself and my wife, yeah, we do. We anchor all of our family. But I'm being honest, and I don't normally talk like this. He's a good son. You couldn't ask for a better son. Sometimes he anchors me.
They tell you to calm down. Yeah.
He's a true gentleman, you know. and I say that without any tongue in cheek. It's an honour to call him a son and a friend because he has got his head screwed on.
He's had a few too many beers.
I've had no beer. He's talking about that. I'm off the beer.
come on, let's keep it going.
He is a good young man, and he's a credit to himself, and he's a credit to myself and my wife.
Oh, he's absolutely a credit to you as his parents, Charlotte, your wife, and yourself. How emotional was it seeing his name up in lights at the Plaza Hotel in the old town, the mob town, that you have now got a relationship with?
We've got a good relationship with Oscar Goodman, mob attorney to Spilotro, who was famous in Casino. And they think the world of him. They've looked after him and his team and myself and my wife, put his name up there in lights, put his picture. He's building relationships wherever he goes. And that's not me. That's not anybody else. That's Johnny, because when people meet him, they appreciate what he does, how he does it, and how he goes about his business. Listen, we're not saying he's going to be the best boxer that's ever lived, but he'll put his heart and soul into whatever he does, and people that get behind him know they get behind someone they can get behind.
Guys, guys, this is a question really to both of you, actually, because, Johnny, I know you're doing a fantastic job in the boxing ring. John, you're doing an unbelievable job outside of the boxing ring. You've created a real social media presence, which involves both of you, involves the whole family, actually.
We just said that,
and it's great, great stuff. But what I was going to ask is, because I know, John, you're there for every single fight and you travel around. My old man was at mine, by the way, every amateur fight, every professional fight. Weirdly, apart from my last one, because he was in Vegas with the kids of Finchley ABC, because he was training Finchley ABC. But what I was going to ask, John, probably I'll fire this one to you, young John first, little John.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I'm me, Spencer Oliver.
I'm little John.
I'm little John.
How can I call you little John?
I am little John.
It's a bit weird, isn't it? It's not like comedy sketch, that one, isn't it?
No, it makes sense.
But anyway, what I wanted to ask you was, how weird would it be for you, because you've built this relationship now, how weird would it be for you if your dad can't make a fight one time? Will that affect you
psychological scaffolding?
Once I'm in the ring, the squared circle, it's just me and the other man. So I don't have to think about that. But I know, I always look, I'll find where my dad's sitting.
But
always
superstition creeps in. There is superstition.
I've got superstitions. I always wear the same pair of Exeter rugby socks every time I fight. I always put my hand, do my hands up a certain way. I do all that stuff. But when it comes to being in the ring, and you've been in there,
yeah,
all the outside stuff goes away. But it's good having my dad around in the camp, having him around there to lean bits of advice on. That's what I need him for. When I'm not sure, when I need a bit of advice,
and
I don't
not
know
only
what's
that,
right.
You know, couple of days before, ideas off. A couple of days before a fight, we always have a big row.
Yeah.
Me and my wife with Johnny, we always have a row about something little.
Food.
Oh, really?
Food.
And see, then, he probably wants you to do one of that.
Could be anything.
Anyway.
We'll have a row. I'm going to have a row.
Could be tickets.
But then the next
day,
bang, he's ready.
I suppose the question then goes over to you, John. How weird would it be for you if you weren't there for your son?
Well, there's a chance I could have missed this one.
It's just an interesting question, do you know what I mean?
People
would
wonder
what it's like, because you're that tight-knit. I think I'm fascinated by it.
He was due to box originally in Florida at the end of the month on the Matchroom show in Florida. And I was due to be in Australia and New Zealand doing a tour. So it would have been tight, because I'd have had to travel back from that and let people down in Australia and New Zealand. I don't like doing that.
Thinking about, looking at the question again, I think what's more important is the build-up to the actual fight. So, like, the weeks in advance, being able to talk and have advice. That's
and
the
he did pop
part.
Out,
because,
didn't you?
Yeah, well, because I popped out to help with camp, get off the plane, no Wi-Fi on the plane. I thought, no one's put anything on about him sparring Michael Hunter.
Right.
I thought, no one's put anything on his sparred Michael Hunter. I get off the coach, and there's Jake Meskell. It's bad news, he's had a bad cut. As soon as I get there.
Let's talk about the cut then, okay? Because you put a video out and people thought you were trying to get on the back of or piggyback Tyson Fury's situation. How bad was yours? Could it have ever stopped you fighting? And discuss the Tyson Fury cut when you saw that.
Well, the Tyson Fury cut is a completely different scenario to mine. One, because that's for an undisputed heavyweight title. And two, it's on the eye. The problem with my cut was not that if it come open in the fight, no problem. The problem is for 3.5 weeks in the most pivotal stage of the camp, I couldn't spar. And we all know you need to spar as a boxer. You need to spar to get your sharpness, your range, your timing. And that was what was playing on my mind. Being cut was not a problem. I had to the problem was keeping it from the board, not letting the commission see. If the commission see I don't get to fight, I've got 400 people travelling over. They've all paid thousands of pounds to be there. That's a different kind of pressure. And then you've got the pressure of thinking, am I sharp enough? Am I doing this? All these doubts are going in your mind. Everyone gets them as a boxer, but you have to deal with it.
Spencer and I talked about the cut to Tyson Fury earlier. What's your instinct on May the 18th that he's got this time to get ready? Is it enough time?
Yeah, it is enough time, I think. He's got to live. The most important thing is just making sure that cut heals. I think he'll be fit enough. It's just you don't want to go back and start sparring again too soon and the cut's not right.
Well, that's the thing, John, that I was mentioning. Like the 10 weeks that he's got really up until that fight, and you go, it's got to heal.
Yeah.
And it's got to heal. That scar tissue still.
Isn't it?
It can take a month at least.
So you were talking about there, the preparation. It's not like the fact that you have to have that sparring, because you've got to get your timing, your distance, your speed, and everything up. Because you can only get a certain fitness in training. You need that fight fitness, and
fight.
The sparring does that.
And that's the most.
And that
that's
was the question simulated. I was asking, is it enough time? A fight of that magnitude?
I think so, because I think when I've looked at camps like I've done, I know it's not the level they're at, but I think 6 weeks of rigorous hard sparring and doing that, I think that's enough.
But could he go into hard sparring after 4 weeks? That's what
I mean. I'm just trying to work out the maths in my head now. Is 4 weeks resting, because even now this has been 3.5, 4 weeks,
yeah,
and you can still be soft, you know, like you can still come open if I started sparring again tomorrow.
Let's talk about another subject. Francis Ngannou. I'm going to throw this to Big John first of all. Eddie Hearn's famously said that Johnny Fisher could handle Francis Ngannou in a round. Discuss, sir.
I think Johnny could handle Francis Ngannou, but not in a round. Give Francis Ngannou more respect than that. But Johnny certainly could fight him. Whether he beat him or not is another thing, but he put up a good show. Right.
I respect Francis Ngannou. Yeah. They're going to make a film about his life, and
I'll give you more than a round.
I'm not being disrespectful to him at all, but I think with heavyweights, why not? Why couldn't I knock him out in a round? Well, he could knock me out in a round.
You could possibly knock him out in a round.
That's the nature of it. Yeah.
There you go. But
he could also, on the other side, he's got a big chance of knocking me out, because he can seriously whack.
Okay, but you're not fighting on March the 8th. But I wanted to ask you about it. Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou on March the 8th. I used the word jeopardy with Eddie earlier. He agrees with the word. Is there true jeopardy, gents, for him in that fight?
Of course. But I think the way that he shaped up against Wallin, I know Wallin wasn't the most formidable opponent, but if he picks him apart with true fundamental boxing skills, which Ngannou doesn't have, I think he can make quite easy work of it. And I think that will build that Fury fight quite nicely because they can say, hang on, we've dealt with him really easily. Let's make that Fury-Joshua fight.
I think AJ, if he's on form, deals with Ngannou quite easily. Right, that's not taking anything away from Ngannou, but he is a boxing novice. And a former world champion should dismantle a boxing novice. But we said that about Fury,
didn't we?
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Yeah. I don't think Fury was as fully prepared as he could have been.
I mean, Fury has got a tendency to do that, hasn't he? When the fights aren't...
Yeah. This man here put the nail into the coffin on what it was. Never got a sharpener, did he?
No, he never got a sharpener. And that's the point, you know. And I think that with AJ going into this one, he now knows what he's going into. That fear factor is there because, Johnny, you will understand
there's data
this
as well.
You need that fear factor to bring the best out to perform.
And there's data on him.
You feel so much better.
What form he has, what shape he keeps.
That my Southern Area fight, because I knew what was bigger, there's more at stake because it's for a title, more people watching. But my level raised because there was a little bit more at stake.
Absolutely. And I think with AJ now, with that momentum, off the one in boxing win as well, and wanting to do better obviously than Fury done, I think he goes in there and does a job. I really do. I think he'll be smart, he'll be educated, but you know, it'll be educated pressure, and he's been active, and I think that sets up a huge year with the heavyweights.
It does.
Little John,
yes,
Big John, thank you very much for coming in the studio. You're off to Portugal tomorrow, have a lovely time.
Thank you very much, sir.
Big John, where are you next?
I've got a few appearances out all over the country next week. York, Durham, Bristol. And then the end of the month, I'm going to Australia for 4 weeks.
Well, we were replete with guests this week. Next up, joining Spencer and myself in the studio, was Too Slick Chris Congo, of course, who has been slated to face Florian Marcoux after their well-documented spat at a press conference where Congo was pushed by Marcoux. They are fighting on the undercard of Fraser Clark and Fabio Wardley on Easter Sunday, March 31st. We are looking forward to that one. Here's Congo, cool as you like.
You're listening to Fight Night on TalkSport with me, Gareth Davis, Spencer the Omen Oliver in the studio with me. Joining us now, Too Slick is here.
Yes,
Chris Congo,
sir.
How are
yes,
you, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm very good. You're looking very wrapped up tonight.
Yes, of course. It's quite cold out there, so don't catch any colds. To be honest, I felt like I had a cold coming up this week, but managed to recover from it. It's good that it happened now then. Later on down the line, you know?
Sound very resonant anyway in your voice. That's why I asked you, did you run in tonight? Because you look like you've been jogging in black beanie on, big coat on.
I had a great S&C strength and conditioning session just today. I train six days a week, so we've got to be on it.
Go, Spence.
Chris, I was going to ask, how excited are you to actually be getting back in the ring? Florian Marcoux, we'll get to in a minute. Mm-hmm. We know the history of you both. There's been plenty
of beef. We'll go over that.
I'm going to let the G-Man start off on that one. But I want to ask you, though, you know, you had that loss to Echo Esserman back in Manchester Arena.
Majority decision. January
2023.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, how excited are you to be getting back in the ring?
Very excited, you know. I've been waiting and waiting for a while.
Why so long?
Just dates didn't align and fights didn't align. Certain fighters still didn't want to fight, but that's just how it is. And it is what it is. It's part of the game. But now it's good that we've got a massive fight, bigger than what I even thought I would get. Mm. And I'm raring to go.
Yeah, you're at that stage. 17th fight, I think it is, isn't it? Yep. We were talking about 17th. This earlier. That at that stage, Johnny Fisher in the studio with us, that you start to get to 17 and you start to talk of it's titles time. But sometimes it's about prize fighting and grudges. Now, Florian Marcoux, we're going to hear from him as well tonight. But there's a big grudge there. He pushed you hard at a press conference. Mm-hmm. You were kind of talking him out at the time. Mm-hmm. Talk us through that day and that incident.
Yeah, so basically I hadn't seen him previously till then. And obviously it was about Bouazzi and Aziz. I didn't want it to make it about us, but I always said to him, because he's been talking so much crap online, I've always said to him, when I see him, I'm going to approach him and we'll have a chat about it. And that's what I done. That's what I done. And as soon as I went to him, everyone started getting their cameras on, you know, started recording. And then, I said to him, yeah, let's make the fight happen. He's telling me that I should go and beat the guys that I've lost to before. So clearly, that's a sign of he didn't want to take the fight with me. Yeah. So then after that, he's telling me, go away. I thought that was a bit disrespectful. And I said to him, listen, I'll go away when I want to go away. Now, if he didn't say that, I would have probably just walked away, let him do his thing, you know.
But, and then he put hands on you, didn't he?
Then he put his hands on me. But it's all good because I'm going to get it back in blood 31st of March.
The omen has been stirring it up. He spoke to Florian Marku last night in Sheffield, and here's what he had to say about you.
It's a good fight. I think people like it. I didn't really bothered me fighting him or not. They wanted this fight. I say, of course, why not? Let's fight. How I'm going to win? I'm going to break him. Slowly. And then she's going to see what I'm about.
He's going to break you slowly. And then he'll see what you're all about. Now, you're a lot taller and a lot longer than him for a start. How does it make you feel when you hear that?
Well, Echo said the same thing. And let's be honest. Echo is technically better than him. Technically better. Probably got a better engine than him. Very, very, very comes forward constantly, yeah. And Echo's tough. He's tough. I hit him with some shots and I saw his face kind of, you know. And he just kept coming. So if he couldn't break me, how is he going to do that, you know? He couldn't even break the light welterweight that he fought out in Albania. And that guy was a light welterweight coming up. He should have dealt with him, but he didn't. So how is he going to deal with a guy like me now with more experience than him? Yeah, fought the better opponents. How's he going to deal with that?
Do you know what? You made an interesting comparison there, and it's only just hit me. I've never thought about this, but you're right in many ways that Echo Esserman and Florian Marku are very similar in the way that they fight. Mm-hmm. And Esserman, yeah, he is the more experienced and probably he's definitely ranked a better fighter right now than Florian because he's more proven. And you had that fight with Echo Esserman. I was there, actually, Manchester Arena. Mm-hmm. And that was a fight of the year contender, like where both of you had to dig deep and show a lot of soul and courage in there, you know, and you showed a lot of character, both of you in that one. And it was one of them fights that could have gone either way. It was a close fight. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been waiting for your opportunity and you get this against Marku. But very interesting comparison because similar in stature there, as in styles and that. And Esserman was one of those guys that's got relentless sort of pressure. And Florian's a guy that likes to come forward and throw punches in bunches and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the question is, is he going to be able to get near you? Is he going to be able to control the space? Because you're great at doing that. Mm-hmm. Experience-wise, you've sort of been there, seen it, done it, which has got to give you the edge.
100%. It's going to give me the edge. Obviously, like I said, our team, we're very technical and we like to break down fighters.
You're still with Ben Davison.
With Ben Davison, Lee Wiley, Barry Smith.
Yeah.
I see all of them as one. So it's a good team out there. We've got a video breakdown of him, of his tendencies, what he does very well, and what he's, you know, what he can't control. And it's been good to break it down and see exactly what he's like.
One of the things that I did say to Spencer, actually, off air, when you came in today, I'd completely forgotten how tall and long you are. You have got massive physical advantages in this fight.
For sure. And right now, I'm not even far off the weight. I'm like 9 to 10 pounds away.
Yeah.
Training at that weight, probably gonna walk in a bit heavier on fight night, and it's gonna be to my advantage for sure.
And you know what? That teaming up with Ben Davison, who's a proven trainer, a proven great trainer. You know, he's getting the results.
Great strategist.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. He's a proper student of the game, and he does break. He goes for a fight with a fine tooth comb, and he must have been able to exploit a few holes and a few chinks in the armor with Florian, because we've seen when he stepped up, Ryland Charlton comes to mind. You know, where he makes little fundamental mistakes, and it's all about whether he can adjust. He comes from a different discipline with the MMA and kickboxing, etc. And sometimes they are a little bit straight backs, and they come in straight lines and whatnot. And it's all about adaptability for me in this one.
For sure.
Who's got the adaptability? Because it's going to come down to that. You know what he's going to do, because he's got to try and take your game away. You know exactly what he's going to do. It's a fascinating fight. It really is. But it comes down to Yeah, strategy and who can work it out. You've got to start a favourite in this one. Well, and I'm not saying that because you're sitting in the studio, mm-hmm, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it because you look it on paper. Me and Gareth were talking about this, actually, yeah, and he did forget your size. And you,
I changed my, I revised my view on the fight.
Yeah, he did.
You can keep him there if you want to. You can keep him there on the end of it. You can keep him there.
For sure.
Mm. You know?
Well, that's what he's expecting, but listen, if something else comes off of it, let's see, you know. Mm. But the main thing is, in this fight, is being smart. And one thing we did notice from round one to round 10 in the fight where he did go to distance, he does the same things, you know. He does the same things. You look at his ring generalship, ring positioning. It's not the greatest. It's not the greatest. It's not going to be better than Echoes, who's come from a place like Team GB, where he's learned to cut off the ring very well. And Marku, he walks back in straight lines. When he comes forward, you see him, he's coming forward, throwing his shots, and he's ending up square. So there's loads of opportunities for me to do certain things in this fight. And yeah, man, I'm just going to have to show you guys.
You're listening to Fight Night Talk Sport. Me, Spencer Oliver, Chris Congo in the studio, the British welterweight fighter. Hamza Shiraz has stopped Liam Williams. The towel came in from Gary Lockett in the first round. He was down twice. Fantastic victory. He retained the Commonwealth middleweight title. He went straight over, did Hamza, very powerful fighter, to embrace Frank Warren. We're going to get, hopefully, Hamza and Frank around 11 o'clock in about 25 minutes' time. But first of all, now, thank you for keeping the track going. We love it. You can just leave it playing in the background the whole time. Feels like I'm at home. Feel like I'm at home.
Well,
are we going
it
out tonight or
we've
not,
lost
Oliver?
It.
We
lost
going
it
out tonight?
Let's do it, man. We need a little reunion.
Look, let's get straight to Chris. We're going to talk about your life in this section, but you were just saying that Hamza is 6'3", very tall middleweight, big advantages, similar reach advantages to you and Florian Marku. You've sparred with him as well.
Yeah, we've done some rounds together, very good rounds, very technical. We was both trying to outthink each other, you know, it's all about their brains, and no one was trying to rush. Not that we was looking for the perfect punch, but we was both trying to set each other up, which was great, great work, and I loved it.
Let's talk about you and your life. You've been in many times. You're a friend of the show. Yep. How did it all begin? Where are you from? How did you get into it? How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I started off at Fisher ABC. My two brothers started before me, Elvis and Obed. Elvis was a pro, 6-0 pro, with a power puncher. And Obed was a great, great international boxer. Boxed for Team GB for about 7 years. Was on the team, now a coach, now a second coach with Chevron Clark, so he's doing very well. And we started off at Fisher ABC in Bermondsey, not too far from here. And yeah, started off then, built myself up, become number one in the UK a few times, won the Golden Gloves Junior ABAs, and then boosted up to GB, was on there for two years, and then moved on to turn pro, man. Started off at welterweight, so yeah.
Is that always a dream, Chris, to do that? You know, you started off at a club, a very recognisable club, a historic club in Fisher, you know, that has produced many, many champions. I remember when I was boxing as an amateur, actually, and you got drawn against, like, you got to the London ABA finals or semi-finals, and you always come up against your Fishers or your West Hams or whatever, but you come up against them guys, you think, oh, man, I'm in for a fight. Even if you don't know the guy, I'm in for a fight, because everyone that fought there could fight. You had to be able to fight out of Fisher, didn't you?
100%. I mean, everyone there could fight. We all bounced off each other. It was just a great club. But also not forgetting that from Fisher, I then moved to Lynn AC, which is in Camberwell. Then I got onto Team GB. Mm. So both clubs done amazing for my, how can I explain it?
For your development. Like moulding you into the fighter
they
you
molded,
become.
Moulded me very well. Obviously, Steve Izell, God rest his soul. And Sam Mullins, Frank Shaw, Terry Pearson, who's currently there, and Jim as well. So yeah, it's a great
100
club.
Years old it is as well. That's amazing, you know.
Historic club that never produced any bad fighters. No. And that's not talking rubbish here, that them clubs, Lynn ABC as well, you knew when you got drawn against these guys in championships, or if you got drawn against them in a club fight, where if you think, I'm in for a hard fight, because they don't let not good fighters out. That's what they do.
St Pancras, Islington, all of the clubs, Repton, Finchley, all great clubs, all great.
For sure.
Tell us about the warrior deep inside you, that figure, that energy, that thing that carries you. Yeah, that thing that carries you, you know? You've got a bearing about you, you know?
There must be a story of how you got into boxing. What made you want to do that? Because there's a little bit of insanity in someone to want to go into the boxing gym in the first place. I don't know, I was seven. Like, what was yours?
Yeah, I started when I was eight, but my two brothers, I always looked up to them. And wanted to be like them at the time.
Oh, so you were advanced all the time.
Yeah. So I watched them and I thought, I want to get into it, you know. And when I put the gloves on for the first time, that was it. It was over for me. So
addiction.
It's a big addiction.
How much do them gloves smell in them amateur clubs? And you never forget that smell, do you?
You never forget.
And you know what the mad thing is? That smell that is absolutely disgusting, by the way. It's that wet, like leather smell. Hundreds of kids a week put these gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the smell that you sort of like, when you walk into an amateur gym, you suck it up and you're like, I miss that smell.
There's
something about the smell, isn't
there?
And obviously... like one time even my sister come into the gym, she was like, it stinks in here.
Yeah, my sister.
And I was like, she don't even know that we just love it.
So you go around saying you smell like Finchley. You smell like Fisher.
No, but it's just the same smell. But
I didn't mention the peacock, by the way, which is another great London gym.
Absolutely. Listen, there's loads of them, you know.
There are so many.
West Ham's, great historic clubs, you know, there's so many great clubs.
But tell us a story though, because I think you've been in lots of time. There's ever been a story where you think there was that moment, apart from like because you're brothers, are there moments where you felt enlivened because of what you do, where you felt special, whether you felt the DNA of your ancestors,
I want to be a fighter,
those dreams that you have, you know.
Well, from young, I always dreamed to become a massive fighter, which obviously is in motion and starting on the 31st of March. That's when I'll really shine like a star. But going back to the question, I always wanted to, you know, be the pro that I am now. And there was a period where I was studying at university, but I didn't know if I should take the boxing seriously, you know. And I always... during the times, I always had dreams and that, but I wasn't really taking boxing serious. So
what were you studying?
I studied sports science. So I gave myself an ultimatum to go hard in both, and whichever one elevates, is that's it. I'm gonna do that. And yeah, man, that year I got to the ABA finals. I got onto GB. And that was my calling from then.
Your degree unfinished then?
Yeah, I left it unfinished.
Will
I ever finish it?
Because it's handy sports science, isn't it?
Of course. Only God knows. But for now, like I said on a previous podcast, on Undefeated podcast, I'm riding till the wheels fall off in this boxing game.
He's thrown all the eggs in one basket. You have to do that as a boxer. Mm-hmm. You got to go 110%. Like, you go, like, listen, it's that life or no life. I've got to go back to doing, like, you know, the universe. You can't play around with it. You've got to go all in. You've got to follow your dreams and believe in yourself. And that's the road that you take.
You can't play it, can you? You've got to live it. Let's talk. We have only got a few more minutes, but we thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure to see you. As I say, you've got this bearing about you. I always feel enlivened when you've been in. And I'm always looking forward to your fight. Always looking forward to your fight.
He's got what you got in a special fighter, right? You've got an aura around you. You can't pinpoint what that aura is.
Oh, I just feel it. I feel it. I see it in the eyes. I feel it. There's a connection always. I enjoy it so much. Conor Benn, the other welterweights in the division, could you start to look at saying, do you know what? I'm pursuing that guy, I'm pursuing that name. What do you think of Conor Benn and what's gone on with him in the welterweight division?
Well, Conor Benn, obviously he's got his little situation at the moment. He's not. I don't know if he's still allowed to fight in the UK. He's not.
No, it's still under appeal.
Well, obviously, I thought he was an innocent man, you know. Mm-hmm. He was knocking out these guys. And then you got someone like Dobson. Obviously, I ain't watched the fight, but I saw a few highlights of it online, on YouTube. And it's like he's finding it hard to get someone like Dobson out. He should have wiped Dobson out, just how...
He was tough and he was undefeated, so you know? I will say that for him. But
how can you go from wiping two top fighters...
With a lot of miles on the clock, I would say that. Of course,
but...
Van Heerden and Algeri, you're talking about, yeah.
Okay, someone like Algeri.
Algeri, no one knocked Algeri out.
Very durable.
But
very
they were
durable.
Very late in their careers. Listen, I hear you. You give your argument.
Mm. Yeah, they were past their time, but still, you know, someone like Dobson, he hasn't boxed for 2 years, and that's a long time out to then come in and go to a distance with Conor Benn. But
do you beat Conor Benn?
100%, of course.
What would you do to him?
Of course. Well, Conor Benn, he's the same. He always comes in aggressive, you know. But I know for a fact, I'll box him easy. That's easy work for me. You know,
do you want to fight him?
100%. That's due to happen soon. You know, once he gets his situation sorted, you know, and yeah, we'll make it happen. But obviously the main focus right now is Florian.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When Chris Congo left us, we then were joined on the phone by Liam Cameron, winner of the Sheffield event on the boxing YouTube channel on TalkSport on Saturday night, the light heavyweight. What a story he had to tell. Spencer Oliver flagged this to me. We got him on the phone. What a story. 5 years banned from the sport. An incredible, torrid time in his life. But Liam wanted to tell all about being back in the world of boxing.
I feel a bit shell-shocked because I don't get this treatment, so thank you.
Well, Spencer's been telling me about your story and I want to get straight into it. I cannot believe what I heard about you earlier from Spencer. We're sitting in the green room getting ready for the show. I cannot believe that you were forced out of the game for 5 years. Please tell us about it and the journey you've been on, Liam.
Oh, it's been ridiculous. So I tested positive for a substance, worst case scenario could have been cocaine, but we're talking traces of it. It were like 25 nanograms. It weren't even like what you could see from your eye. And give them every possible answer I could do. Obviously, there's other cases where people have handled banknotes. I bite my nails. You can see like I've got Like I'd bite my nails and it's gone into the system. And I got 4 years. I couldn't believe it. And I paid for the drug test because it's random. And I paid £1,000 out of my purse to pay for this drug test. And it bit me on the backside.
So you did a 4-year ban from the sports, yeah?
4-year ban. 4 year. I did 5 in total because it just completely broke me. It put me to my knees and it were bad. Everything I've dreamed for as an 8-year-old kid, finally winning the belt, and it got ripped away from me.
Liam, tell us exactly what it did do to you, mate, because I know, and the reason I say that is because I want our listeners and our viewers that are watching this on our YouTube channel, I want them to know exactly what you went through at that moment when you got that ban, you know, the struggles that you had with life in general and how it nearly broke you as a person and how you've come back from that. That's the journey we want to hear because, mate, it's such an inspirational one.
Yeah, so, like, I got that. Then I started drinking, and I ended up in a state where I were hearing when I shut my eyes at night, I could hear like people crying in my head, and like it weren't a pretty sight. It was obviously trauma I was going through. I put on 6 stone.
God.
I went to hospital. I had a drug overdose. I nearly died in hospital, and the sport I loved. This what happened to me. Then I see fighters, not going to mention names, take steroids, human growth hormone, and they get 6 months. And I've had to watch this on telly. And I've been drowned in my sorrows watching it. But on a positive note, I'm now 4 months sober and I'm back boxing to what I love.
So you lost 5 years effectively of your life. And tell us about the journey back after that time out.
So, yeah, I want to pick up on when I did have the ban. My stepdaughter, she got killed in a car accident. God. And, like, that broke us, so I had to be strong for my family. And, it's been a hell. Listen, if I can get back to my feet, I've had to crawl my way back, and if I can do it, listen... And people think they're down and there's no way out. You can get back to your feet. There's possibility.
What kept your faith over that 5-year period, Liam?
Nothing kept me faith, to be fair, because after I got back, I ended up taking a drug overdose and in ambulance with sirens on. And I prayed to God. I said, listen, if I can get through this, I'll never drink again. Just please let me survive this. And I were having seizures, everything. And they just said, look, you're in a bad way. My heart rate were like 150-something overnight. They were giving me tablets to slow it down and it wouldn't happen. And from that day, I just said, look, I'm going to end up dying here. And I completely changed my life around.
You really did, mate, because... I saw the pictures of you at your worst, really, you know, when you'd ballooned up in weight and, like, you know, you talked about your life struggles and whatnot. And I know that you still, you know, plead your innocence in what happened and the way that it was done. And yes, you was harshly dealt with whatever it was. And if you was going to get any punishment, I accept that. But, you know, the length of the man that you had, and I know that how much of a life struggle it was. And I saw you, like I say, at the worst, and just say, like, you know, at what point did you go, right, this is it. This is how I'm going to change it. I mean, last night, mate, you won against a very durable opponent, a guy
in
Harry Matthews, yep. Who's been around a long, long time, survives the distance. You've done it in brilliant clinical finishing, you know, in that first round. I mean, real showstopper and a show stealer in many ways. And I thought, that's Liam Cameron back to his best. And there was no one I've been more pleased for to see you after those struggles, coming back the way you have. And we've been speaking a little bit, haven't we, since your last fight, your first one. I said, I want to get you on TalkSport because you deserve the opportunity to tell your story, you know, so that people, you know, can hear it.
Yeah. I've been trying to put it out on Twitter, little bits and stuff, but it's like no one wants to hear my side of the story because they just... You get GMTV getting Conor Benn's emotions on. And I'm like, wait, what about... Does anyone just forget about me? Do you know what I mean? I'm human too, do you know what I mean? And what I've had to go through. I'm not sat at home with £1 million. I didn't even have £10 for electric. We used to sit in dark because we were that broke. Me and we lost his stepdaughter. We were that broke. We couldn't even put £10 in electric. And from coming through that, it's like this boxing is. I can't be feared, can I? I'm just gonna do my best for 4 years. Give it everything. I'm at a great gym, Steel City, with Pierce, Grant. We've got everyone down there what's helping me. My help out in gym and stuff. And like, I just want to be a better person, give back to sport. And I think I'm getting through doing this, being a nice person, everything's coming back nicely for me.
Yeah, and I'm pleased that, you know, we've got you on tonight to tell your story there, mate. And now let's move on to, you know, your comeback, second fight as your comeback. And mate, I was there last night. I worked on it. You know, Harry Matthews, you know, expected to go a few rounds. What a performance, mate. Talk us through that moment when you walked onto doing that walk-on, you know, with the lights going. You had a big crowd in there as well. Big support, by the way, in Sheffield. A lot of support up there. What was that moment like, mate? And let's talk us through that victory.
I had a bit of pressure because I thought, I know I was going to beat the kid, but I thought, I've got to do one better. I've got to beat him better than anyone else has. And then they were saying, don't rush it, don't rush it. So, but I did a bit and I got the stoppage of demolition job and it was in the first round. I don't think anyone's done that to Harry. And like, I felt bad for him in a way.
Liam, we wish you all the best with your comeback. What an incredible story. Please stay with us as a friend of the show. We want to get you into the studio to tell your story another time. Spencer's told me amazing things about you. I can't wait to meet you in person. Thank you so much for joining us tonight and congratulations on your victory last night.
Thanks very much. Thank you for giving me this time.
Well, finally this week, ahead of the Super Bowl, Michael Bisping was doing the rounds in Radio Row in Las Vegas. I caught up with him about UFC 300 impending. Of course, we were both, myself and Michael, at UFC 100. UFC 200, he fought at UFC 100. UFC 200, we had a vigorous debate about where we were with the UFC right now. And Tom Aspinall and a fight potentially with Pereira. Could it really happen?
So far, we've got the BMF title on the line. We've got the KJ match all the way. We've got the most exciting strawweight fighter that we've seen, Zhang Weili, defending the belt, and she's phenomenal. Charles Oliveira and Armin Sarucci. That is a ridiculous fight. Yuri Prohaska, a former champion, taking on someone that has the ability to be a champion in Alexander Rakic. Kelvin Cater, fan favourite, taking on former champion, Aljamain Sterling. Bo Nickel, one of the biggest prospects in all of the sport of mixed martial arts, taking the next logical step in the progression of his career against Cody Brundage. Two former champions, Figueiredo, taking on Cody Garbrandt. Holly Holm, who's the main event of UFC 200. I mean, the list goes on. Bobby Green, Jim Miller, throwback, fan favourite fight. I mean, what are you all complaining about, right?
No, I'm not complaining. I'm just asking, does it match?
You're having a dig. And we still haven't had the main event announced yet, okay?
Who's it going to be? Who's it going to be?
People love to rip and talk and tear it down and go, oh my God, this fight card. I'll say it again. Oliveira, Armasol, Rufin, just engaging Max Holloway. Zhang Weili, Yuri Prohaska.
No, it's
these are all pay-per-view headliners by themselves. Yeah.
Will it break the records then? Will it break the records?
Hey, I'm not a fortune teller.
Okay, no, well...
Nostradamus.
Nostradamus Bisping.
Nostradamus Bisping. Have you got the main event yet, Gareth?
No, absolutely. No, like I said, I'm just mirroring what people have been saying, that because I think.
Get an opinion of your own, Gareth. Don't go to.
I've got enough. I've got enough opinions as it is. Everyone's got one, if you know what I mean. I think people wanted to see Conor McGregor against Michael Chandler, didn't they? I think that if they could have got that on there, it would have been fantastic because of the way it would have sold. But look, let me ask you a couple more things. So I know I haven't got you. Pick.
It's okay, Gareth. You're absolutely right in what you say there. But the reality is that Conor McGregor can go on any card. It doesn't need to be a tricentennial. Tricentennial event. It could be on any card, and that would be almost the numbers. I think the cachet of UFC 300 kind of already sells itself, but they put it on a stellar card, and we get to have the main event. So, listen, we want to see McGregor versus Chandler. And I respect Conor McGregor for everything that he's achieved and the money that and the wealth that he's amassed and still choosing to fight. And against Chandler, he's got his hands full. That's a phenomenal fight. For whatever reason, it's not materialising. But I'm very excited to find out who the main event is going to be. Sorry, Gareth, you were saying.
No, no, all I would say is in the land of mixed martial arts, the one-eyed man is king.
Let's go, brother.
Okay, look, PFL and Bellator are having champions against each other. I know Bellator have been acquired by PFL, and that's going to happen in Saudi in a week or two's time. Do you think we're going to move towards champions in one of the... We got it with Hearn and Warren in boxing at the moment. They're going to go against each other with five fighters in June. Do you think we'll get to the point, some point from now, where we will get a crossover with, say, five PFL or Bellator champions, it'll be PFL champions, against five UFC champions? Because surely that's an advancement, even if it's a one-off.
Yeah, look, listen, I understand what you're saying and the progression of the sport, even though maybe one day down the line in the future. But to be honest, that would be like, it's a bargain bin champion taking on, you know, the prestige is all on the side of the UFC, and I'm not saying that as a pro-UFC guy, because I am. And I'm not trying to trash the PFL or Bellator. The more organizations, the better. But in terms of name value, right, it's all on the side of the UFC. I mean, Kayla Harrison.
So MMA.
She was going to fight in the PFL, weren't she?
Yeah. So do you think boxing needs it? Because it does. Boxing certainly needs it, but maybe because promoters don't, but maybe MMA doesn't because the algorithm's different, is what you're saying.
Yeah, look, listen, I do understand what you're saying, and it's great that in boxing we get to see this all the time. But they do have different business models, as you know, Gareth. All bravado and silliness aside, you know, they have different business models right now, and in the future, who knows what will happen. You know, I'm just a lowly commentator. you know, I don't know too much about the inside politics and the contractual side of things, but there's always going to be changes. I mean, the sport of mixed martial arts is still in its infancy. We're only 30 years old, for crying out loud. So, of course, there will be changes in the future. Right now, that's just the landscape for the time being.
I know you're a big boxing fan as well. Obviously, you're a formidable boxer yourself. What do you make of all the criticism of Tyson Fury and all this ridiculous controversy and spurious stories that he cut his own eye to get out of the fight? It does happen in sparring, doesn't it? And it's unfortunate, but quickly they've stepped in to make it still happen. It's incredible that people thought he was deliberately pulling himself out of the fight.
It's ridiculous. It really is. I've been there myself. I've punched myself in training many times. And I know for a fact, when I flew out to UFC, whatever it was, to fight Luke Rockhold the first time, I got kneed in the head. I had a huge cut on my eye, but I chose to fight. And in the fight, and I'm not making excuses, that cut opened straight away after pretty much the first initiation of contact. That cut opened straight away. So Tyson did the right thing. People get caught. It's professional sports. You have to train hard and you have to spar hard to get ready for these kind of fights. You have to train the way that you choose to fight. And sadly, things like this happen. For anybody making these conspiracy theories, they've got nothing better to do. They really haven't. If they knew anything about the sport and the type of preparation that is involved, then you would know that sadly, it's a tale as old as time, part of the pun, that these things do happen. The good news is it's been rescheduled.
Yeah.
It's not Tyson Fury trying to get longer to prepare. All you're going to do, if anything, is overtrain. Okay. So it happens all the time. How many fights in the UFC get cancelled or postponed because of training injuries? So I don't understand why there's any controversy or any conversations, to be quite frank.
Final one. March the 8th, you know him well, I know him myself well, Francis Ngannou. Can he give Anthony Joshua problems?
I do believe he can. I think he answered a lot of questions in the fight with Tyson Fury, right? Because the questions were, can he go 10, 12 rounds? Yes, he can. Can he take a shot from these boxers that have been preparing to punch since they were 3 or 4 or 5 years old? Yes, he can. Can he deliver with enough power to hurt these guys? Of course, Rob Tyson, yes, he can. And I think if anything, losing that split decision but winning the moral victory is going to give him way more confidence, because there must have been a tremendous amount of doubt going into that fight against Tyson Fury. Well, now the questions have been answered, so he's going to be even more confident. And confidence is a fighter's best friend. So in terms of conditioning and taking shots and the power and all the rest of it, they're all big ticks. Okay, the confidence is there as well. Obviously, it's not an easy job, right? Anthony Joshua is a phenomenal boxer. Last time out against Otto Wallin, he looked like he was back to his old hungry self. And he's got a point to prove as well. Okay, so it's going to be a tremendous fight. Don't sleep on Francis Ngannou. I'm not going to sit here and say that he beats Anthony Joshua. That would be disrespectful, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Great to hear from the great Michael Bisping, the former UFC middleweight champion, a long-standing friend of mine, a friend of the show. Great stuff to hear from Michael. Well, you've been listening to the Fight Night podcast on Talk Sport. I'm Gareth Davis. My thanks to all our guests this week and Spencer for a rollicking time in the studio. Subscribe to us, watch our YouTube channel, the midweek shows with Jim White and Simon Jordan and Spencer on a Thursday, and mine with Adi Oladipo, Fight Night Extra, on a Tuesday. We'll see you next time.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.